The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
We have main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Space Show. You are listening to the host, David Livingston. It's great to be here. Thank you all for tuning in. I know this is an unusual hour for the Friday Space Show, but we appreciate your being here. A couple of quick announcements. As always, for those of you who will hear this show Sunday or later on your favorite AM and FM station, you're hearing a replay, which means that the chat information and the toll-free number will not be available to you. Email is always available. So just remember, if you want to communicate with the guest, you are hearing it as a replay, please use email. I'll be giving out those addresses in just a moment. For everybody else listening live right here on Friday, the toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. Remember, it's an MCI toll-free number. If you're outside the United States, feel free to contact your MCI in-country operator and tell them you want to be connected to this number in California. You should be able to connect up to us on the toll-free basis. For those of you who would prefer using email, our three addresses are dmlivings@yahoo.com, drspace@thespaceshow.com, or thespaceshow@gmail.com. For those of you using chat, remember we're on the AOL family, so we have IM, ICQ, or CompuServe for you to use. The screen name is one word for all of those services, Space Show Chat. Remember, we're trademarked, registered, and copyrighted, but you do have permission to download the show, share them, pass them around any way you want. Please, nothing commercial with the programs, and no changes in the text of any of the interviews. As always, special thanks to Andrew over at gigadial.net. They give us our podcasting service, and you can find that RSS URL on our website and both newsletters. If you have any problems about our podcast, please send us a note, drspace@thespaceshow.com, and visit us at our website, thespaceshow.com. Remember, our fully detailed, comprehensive newsletter, including future events, gets posted early Monday morning California time. Check it out. Sometimes we have to change a program, add a program, or make an announcement that all of you need to hear or will want to hear. You'll find it first on that website newsletter. Everything we do is archived, so you can get it free, easy, no login or anything like that. See our website, thespaceshow.com. If you need some of the early shows as an MP3 rather than a WMA file, they've been converted. They're temporarily on the Mars Society website. The first paragraph of our website newsletter tells you how to find those. We have a store. Check that out on our website. And also you'll see the Support the Space Show button. Remember, we're a nonprofit 501c3 with One Giant Leap Foundation, and we do need your support. It's a big undertaking. I do this show on my own, and it's not easy. And we thank you for your support. Those of you who will support us have supported us. It's a big help, and we appreciate it very much. For hold the events, hold the dates coming up. There's a couple, and we'll do them today. The Symposium for Personal Spaceflight is right around the corner in Las Cruces, New Mexico, October 22nd to the 23rd, and you can find out information about that at spacegrant.nmsu.edu. And then there's the Space Investment Summit in Los Angeles. That's actually next week, October 15th. In fact, we'll hear a little bit more about that today with our guest in just a minute. But you can get more information about that on their website. We did a program about it about 2 weeks ago, October 15th. If you're in the Los Angeles area or planning to be there, you might want to check it out and attend. Okay, ATWIG has their big meeting at NASA Ames, December 9th through the 11th, atwg.org. And then on into 09, the Space Propulsion and Energy Sciences International Forum is in Huntsville this year, not Albuquerque, February 24th through the 27th. Google for SPESIF, S-P-E-S-I-F, and you can get all the information you need about that. And then Responsive Space, number 7, Los Angeles, April 27th through the 30th. It's always at the Westin Hotel, which is right adjacent to LAX, and that's responsivespace.com. Please remember, it's a political season. You'd have to be living under a rock to not know it or to have forgotten about it. But you might want to sound off to one of the two candidates or to both of them or your members of Congress. I'm still doing it with the Mars Society Facts Tool. http://facts.marssociety.org. I'm only going to be announcing this for another 3 weeks or so. So sound off to these people. Let them hear from you frequently as to why space is important, as well as anything else you might want to say. Remember, we're in Facebook. We're in MySpace. We're doing Twitter. So check us out in those venues. So our guest today, recently back from Scotland, Loch Ness, and an encounter with Nessie, is our friend Tom Olson. And Tom, you heard talking to us about 2 weeks ago on the Space Investment Summit program. So we'll hear a little bit more about that today. But Tom is a managing partner of Exodus Consulting, co-founder of Colony Fund. For nearly a quarter of a century, he has been a business systems engineer and analyst in communications, aerospace, publishing. His full bio is going to be on the page, but some of the really terrific things he's done is a really great website about the injustices our space friend Walt Anderson has encountered. JusticeForWalt.com is a website that Tom has. And let me tell you something. If you all think that just because Walt got convicted that he's a bad guy, think about the bastards that are in Congress that have screwed our economy and so many of us out of our retirement and out of our money and are walking around like heroes and lying through their teeth. And you go to Justice for Walt and you tell me we have justice for Walt and we have justice in this country. That's my political rant for the show. Justice for Walt is Tom's site. He is a co-space cynic. And he is one of the four that are on Space Cynics, invited along with the rest of us by Space Cynics founder Shabir Ali. He's a newly elected member of the board of directors of the Space Frontier Foundation and an overall truly cool, great, nice guy, sharp guy for space commerce. He usually does our end-of-the-year roundup for the space show. And he just got back, as I said, from Scotland. He was really there for the IAC, not for Nessie. And Tom, welcome back from Scotland. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, David. Thank you for having me.
You gotta, you know, like that Mercury commercial, you gotta put Mercury on your list. You gotta go to Justice for Walt and put what a horrible travesty of justice this whole thing is for Walt Anderson.
And as soon as I find a moment, maybe even this weekend, I'm actually gonna do just that. I've got an article, a short article I've been working on, basically saying, yeah, what is the justice here when a guy like Walt can get
never heard a flea, never heard a person,
never did anything. And actually, he wasn't even convicted of anything. He agreed to a plea bargain. It wasn't like they did a jury trial and the jury found him guilty.
Well, and they also, you know, talk about doing a plea bargain under duress, and then you say, yeah, oh, I'm not being duressed. Come on, give me a break. The guy's about near death in the Washington, D.C. lockup. They took all of his bank accounts away from him. He's forced to have incompetent public defenders. He couldn't help defend himself. He didn't get doctors for illnesses. I mean, this is really a travesty of justice.
Well, I mean, since you bring that up, I mean, it's the irony of all this is their reasoning for keeping him in that hellhole for 26 months is because they said he was a flight risk. As soon as he pled guilty, he was sentenced to Club Fed, a minimum security facility in Fairton, New Jersey, where there are, in some areas there aren't even any fences. And his job was to be a gardener. They gave him a three-wheeled motored cart. to take his tools around. He could have just driven it off the property into the next town in a half an hour, which he doesn't do, of course.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he didn't rip anybody off. So,
no.
Okay. Well, Walt's a friend and always will be, and I know you share in that, too. Again, people, go to Justice for Walt if it's a case that interests you. And, you know, thank Tom for putting all the documents and the information up on that site.
And I'll say up front, I don't update it as often as I'd like to. I'm really gonna, I have a three-day weekend ahead of me so I can play some catch-up. I'm still playing catch-up from IAC, which has been over for a week now. So,
well, tell us about IAC in Scotland. Are you glad you flew over the pond to go to it?
Absolutely. That was really an incredible program. And it's called the International Astronautical Congress, and it's put on once a year by the International Astronautical Federation. And this is the 59th one they've done. It's a big congress. It's international in scope, and it brings in everybody from the industry and from advocacy and from science and from educational community, and they all academics, and they all come together, and they talk about policy, and they share technology, and they share other ideas for an entire week. And this is the first time, actually, the reason I went, this is the first time, actually, they've done a business-related track. And for 3 days, we also did business-related things on new startups and alt space and new space and attracting private capital investment. And this is the first time that's been done at this conference.
And you presented in that session, right?
I did present in that session, yes.
Well, we'll ask you about that in just a minute. How many people attended overall? Was it?
Oh, the estimate was about 3,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's far more than anyone attends a conference in the United States alone.
Yeah. And they go around the world to different places every year. The last time they had one in the United States was in 2002 in Houston. And the next one, their 60th anniversary conference, will be in Daejeon, Korea.
Interesting.
Yeah, and this one in Glasgow was the first time they'd had one in the UK in 20 years.
Who comes to this? Let's get a profile. Is it young people? Is it are there a lot of students there? Is it
there is a student community there because they do something like kind of pre-conference. They have what's called a youth congress of some kind, and they do that for a couple of days just prior to the main event. And that goes on. And they have a lot of technical and administrative meetings called Academy Day, and they have all sorts of administrative things that they do. But, there's a lot of stuff that's really youth-oriented and academic-oriented to get everybody all excited. And then they have the main event for an entire week, where there's a lot of different kinds of plenary events, technical sessions. I mean, I'm only one man. This drove me crazy. I'll give you an example. Here's one day alone, one morning, they had sessions on radiation health issues in human spaceflight, small satellites potential for future integrated applications, new materials and structural concepts, space power technologies and components, future space transportation systems, and space expectations, how the public views space activities. Now, each one of those points had a bunch of different presentations within it, like up to 10. I am only one man. I can't do all this, but on the bright side, everybody who presents uploads their presentation to a central place, all their slides, the paper they're presenting, and the whole thing. So sooner or later, I will get around to reading a lot of the things that I just couldn't witness myself because there wasn't enough of me to go around.
Let's see. Do you think that Americans coming over from the United States representing, you know, new space, for example, big percentage of the crowd or barely noticeable?
Not barely noticeable, but there were a small percentage of the crowd. I mean, a lot of the crowd was dominated by larger industry types. That part of the conference is more industry-oriented. But what's happening now, people are actually building hardware and flying it, usually for government space programs or for military purposes, and some you know, big ticket commercial, Comsat operations and things like that. I did get the opportunity to go to an industry luncheon where I actually met some key people in a lot of the major industrial sectors, and actually at my table was someone who was turned out was the head of the European Space Agency.
Interesting.
That's to say. So, and so it was a very interesting group of people, and I collected some great digits, as they say.
Do you think that? Well, we often joke around and kid around on the space show and sometimes in private that a lot of new space doesn't make economic sense, that it's challenging. Well, you've heard it all. I'm trying to be kind and generous here. I guess what I'm trying to find out is how grounded in reality is the crowd that you met in Glasgow versus, you know, the typical thing we meet at ISDC or Mars Society or Space Frontier Foundation or even an AIAA meeting. Is it a real different kind of crowd in how they approach space? Are they the dreamers, the entrepreneurs? What can you say about that?
Well, again, this is the first time they've actually had an entrepreneurial and private business and fundraising-oriented kind of track at this conference. Before this, it's always been science and engineering and largely and policy and a lot of information sharing in that regard. And so this is the first time we really talk, you know, the business side from an entrepreneurial perspective has not been presented at one of these conferences before. And this is the first time this has been done, and I thought it carried off quite well. There was an interesting glitch in that there's a bunch of NASA people who were supposed to come, and all of a sudden at the last minute, they couldn't. And some tracks emptied out quite a lot because of this. Turns out, there's some obscure law that limits supposedly NASA personnel on international trips. They're going to an international conference, only 50 NASA personnel at a time can attend or something. There was over 100 NASA personnel who had signed up for this conference, and somebody reminded Mike Griffin about this obscure law, and all of a sudden he was scrambling, and a lot of people just had to cancel their trips.
I bet Mike didn't cancel his, did he?
No, he was there.
Did you hear Mike's talk?
I did not.
Okay. I was going to ask you to summarize it. But
No, I didn't.
Did you hear Scuttlebutt get a sense of what people thought about it, especially the non-Americans?
Actually, from what I didn't hear much of anything from them. And some people went there and said, yeah, I heard Mike Griffin talk, and they didn't say anything. So I don't know if it really had an impact or not.
Interesting.
No, in other words, there was no scuttlebutt at all, even amongst people I knew.
So from what you did hear with Scuttlebutt, what was highest on the radar that you can remember?
Oh, from his talk?
No, just in general from the conference. What were some of the real high points? What was a real winner at the conference?
There's just too much going on to try to pin that down. I mean, there's a few good plenary sessions that I really enjoyed. There was something at the end is very highly speculative, and they talked about interstellar propulsion systems. There was always feet on the ground, solid science.
Yeah, I've done some shows on that with real advanced propulsion breakthrough engineers who are very grounded in reality.
Right, because the theme of this conference this year was from imagination to reality.
Cool.
And so everything had to kind of fit within that overall theme.
Barbara in Salt Lake City says, I attend quite a few space conferences. Actually, I'd rather stay out in the hallway and network with people and do the socials. That's more valuable to me. I'm wondering how you found that to be at an international conference. I'm assuming because it's in Scotland, English was the language, so there were no barriers that way. But are the people as networking-oriented and party-oriented as they are in the States?
They certainly are, I would say, and even more so. Case in point was the reception. The very first night there was a reception. It started about 7 o'clock and went on until about 10 or so. And they had it at the Glasgow Science Center, which is kind of across the Clyde River from the main convention hall. And I thought, okay, this is an interesting place to have a reception. I saw some big room off to one side when you first go into the main entrance. But okay, that's where we're having it. And they started taking groups in, and they took us past this table, just laden with rows of, you know, full wine glasses and things, but we weren't allowed to take one. Then they took us upstairs to a second floor where we saw the same thing. Then they took us upstairs to a third floor where we saw the same thing. And finally we went up to a fourth floor, and they finally said, here, now you can partake. And there were tables filled with wine glasses, and there was food they brought out.
What were the other floors for, just to fill up as they kept coming in?
They just filled it up as they kept coming in, and we filled up all four floors.
Nice.
Unbelievable. And so, and each floor had a different little kind of tone and atmosphere to it. And so I just kind of worked my way back down at the end, and I was amazed by that. I've never seen something that.
What was their exhibition hall like?
The exhibition hall was really, really, the exhibition hall or the conference hall?
No, where the companies have their displays and give away goodies.
That was quite nice. It was very large. In fact, it was kind of underrepresented. I mean, compared to the conference in Houston.
Yeah, I remember that was 10 years ago.
Six.
6 years ago, yeah.
That was gigantic. And then that whole room was just filled with different things. This room was a big, big room, but it wasn't completely full. It was pretty full, but there were definitely some areas that were being underutilized, and I found that they left the student oriented sections kind of off in the hinterlands, off to the side from where all the main milling about was going. So it's hard for them on some days to get some traffic. Because I know some of your associates at UND had a booth out there, and they were a little concerned that they wouldn't get enough traffic because they were kind of set apart a little bit from the rest of the main action in the convention hall.
Question for you from Ken in Cheyenne. I don't get many questions from Cheyenne. Interesting.
Okay.
Ken says, two parts to my question. I hope the first one, which will be a little bit political, can be responded to on the space show. Did you get any sense from the non-Americans who were there as to who they might favor as president of the United States and who they might have thought would have the better space policy? In addition, the conference took place before the big major meltdown news and stock market crashes here as well as in Europe. I'm wondering what the attitude was of people for the onset of civil as well as commercial space programs. Everybody knew there was already a financial crisis. Did anybody think that this was going to hinder any space development either through Europe and Asia or in the United States?
Not short term. Again, a lot of the people that attend this conference are industry type people, and they're doing things for their governments or for military or something like that. And there is a lot of commercial stuff too, but it's big ticket commercial stuff. And a lot of those budgets are already settled, you know, long in advance of anything else. In fact, I thought it kind of ironic when they, in our country, when they passed the bailout bill a while back, last week, about the same time there was the NASA funding bill started going through, and they added $2 billion to it.
It's all funny money, Tom.
Yeah, I know it is. They're just, you know, they're just cranking out the presses, but they probably won't. But they'll still have the same purchasing power it does now when NASA gets it. It just won't have it when it trickles down back to us. But I didn't see any concerns at that moment. I mean, the Wall Street meltdown hadn't happened yet, of course, but the bailout bill was being argued that week, and the first no vote actually happened during that week, and so there was. But I didn't see a lot of concern on anybody's faces. I know the UK people I talked to, they're having similar financial meltdown problems there as we're having here. So we were all of the idea, hey, we're all in the same boat no matter what happens.
Absolutely. And that, of course, has been made very, very clear over the past several days. What about the first part of Ken's question? Did you pick up any preferential sentiments for one candidate or another in terms of space policy or preference?
Not in terms of space policy or preference, but in terms of just general, just overall, you know, might one do a better job than the other one for terms of foreign policy and overall good deeds in the world? I think they were leaning towards Obama in that regard. They didn't have a lot of good feelings about McCain.
Gee, I wonder if Acorn will go over there and register him to vote. There's my political dig for the day. Now I got to balance it out and dig somebody else on the other side. So we'll have to find that opportunity so I can't be accused of being partisan for the nonprofit. But I don't know, you know, Saturday Night Live, this whole thing is just one big comedy sketch for Saturday Night Live on both sides of everything. It's,
oh,
I mean,
Tina Fey's career is cemented forever.
Absolutely. But I mean, you know, what else can you do but kind of just sit back and laugh, because we're all powerless.
Exactly. We have one vote, and that's all it's worth.
Well, yeah. You don't even have that, because if you don't vote for the winner in your state, you don't get any electoral votes going to your candidate for president, because almost all the states are winner-take-all. So for president, you don't even get one vote unless you vote for the winner.
My vote is just a drop in the ocean anyway in that regard.
I just hope at some point some statesmen come along and can fix our broken, messed up, tampered with system on both sides. And that's about all we can hope for. And
well, I find it ironic after all those primary battles that my guy Ron Paul is now getting a whole new lease on life.
Well, he's a commentator, right? Well, he's a commentator now, correct?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, he looks like he's a commentator. He's still a sitting congressman. He's going to be one again. He's running unopposed in his district in the general election. So, but they've got him on every show, every day, sometimes twice a day. I don't know how he keeps up.
Listen, I would do it if they paid me too. Absolutely, this is probably better pay than being a congressman.
Well, but it's such vindication, you know, after all that.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, how do you, as a sitting congressman, become a reporter? I mean, I don't.
Well, he's not a reporter. He's not even a commentator. They just keep having him on as a guest.
So he's not billed as a reporter.
He's not
or
a regular guy on any of these shows.
Okay,
but they just have him on all the time. I don't know where he finds the time.
Well,
you basically say, I told you so, you know, but
I don't think there's a lot that he really has to pay attention to in Congress, given what's happening up there. So,
yeah,
you know, and they're going to be on
Dr. No, you know how he's going to vote.
Yeah. And they're going to be on vacation soon anyway, unless they get a special session called. I think they should send them all away. And, you know, some of the states, you know, their legislatures, you know, only convene once in 2 years. And, mm-hmm. and you know, they're kind of like part-time legislatures, and the states seem to do very, very well.
Somehow they live. They survive.
Yeah, and they're not
government.
They're not overly burdened and overly regulated, and I know they're small population states. I know that, you know, that's a big, huge advantage for that, but still, you know, maybe we don't have to have them full time.
Well, on that note, I'll do my one political rant for the day. I've been thinking about it all day. We talked about it before the show, and that is, I'm just wondering, after this week's meltdown on Wall Street, what the people who voted for that bailout bill are now thinking. Because I'm sure most of them, some of them are craftier than that, and they have their own weird political reasons. But I'm sure a lot of these people who voted in whatever faith for that bailout bill probably were thinking they were voting for it because they wanted to avoid what just happened. I mean, I thought that voting for that bill would help avoid what just happened on the Wall Street meltdown this week.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the operative word there is thinking.
Well, yeah.
So
if I was one of those guys, I'd be going, hey, can I change my vote back?
Speaking of all of this, and we're coming up on the break, but we can at least get started. I want to hear about your presentation in this special entrepreneurial business session that you mentioned.
Glad to talk about it.
So you've got about a minute before the break. What was the topic of your presentation?
My topic, nothing major, just a vision for space investment long term.
And how was it received?
I think it was received quite well. I was first up, so that's always the deal.
And was it a multinational forum?
Yes, it was.
So it wasn't just Americans in there?
It was a specific forum about attracting private investment. And my idea is my idea among many, but there were people represented from all over the place.
And it went over well?
I think so.
We're going to take our break in just a second, and so I want to hear about it. One last question before the break. Was it at all similar to the talk you gave at ISDC?
It was an abbreviated version of it, but I hit all the high points.
So they didn't give you as much time as you had at ISDC?
I only had 15 minutes.
15 minutes?
15 minutes.
Does that include Q&A?
Yeah.
Man.
And I was lucky. A lot of people on the other tracks got like five. They present, really, they're there to present a paper. So they give a quick overview of their paper and show a few slides. and hope they get interest in people downloading the paper later and reading the whole thing.
Well, you have to be tight. Okay.
Yeah.
Stay right there, everybody. Hang on. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Our guest today, Tom Olson.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible. The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
The mission of the Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space today the realities of tomorrow.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to The Space Show. I'm your host, David Livingston. Our guest today, Tom Olson. So, Tom, tell us more specifics about your vision for space presentation at IAC.
Okay. I've been working on this concept for actually for quite a while. But
actually, for a 15-minute talk, you could deliver it right here on the Space Show.
Well, I focus on a specific problem. The challenges, especially in entrepreneurial space, you want to attract seed and early-stage capital. Now, the sweet spot for most seed and early-stage investment is the $500,000 to maybe $10 million range, sometimes as high as $20 million. That's where the vast majority of the seed and early-stage deals happen, and there are billions of dollars going out every year to new startup companies by investors, angel and early-stage VC investors in that range. And the new space entrepreneurs don't attract a lot of that because of the inherent risks involved in what they're doing, but we know the reasons, and we've talked about that, you know, on the show for many years. But one of the main reasons I think that we fail to meet that challenge is because whenever you go to a conference here in the U.S., all they talk about are three things: launch, tourism, and spaceports. And those are the things that are the most capital intensive and the riskiest ventures that you can get involved in. It usually takes someone with very deep pockets to get involved in that. And so the sweet spot investors, as I call them, generally stay away. But there's a lot more to space or space-related type of investing than launch tourism and spaceports. And I have another slide that shows this pyramid where underneath there's tons of other things: software, education, adventure travel, biotech, nanotech, basic research, support services, data storage, pharmaceuticals, component manufacturers, new media, Web 2.0, advanced textiles, alternative energy, new energy storage systems, better optics and imaging, communications, exotic materials. There's a lot of places you can go that might ultimately, either up front or down the road, have a space component. Excuse me, I'm still getting over a little cough I picked up. And so I decided maybe to take really a big overview, and I worked backwards from the goal. And, you know, and when you put on your advocacy hat, the goal of all this ultimately is to have a spacefaring civilization, people living and working on other places out in the solar system and using those resources to sustain themselves and create a new economy and expand into the next wave of human civilization on planet Earth, and, you know, off Earth. But enhances life on Earth as well, economically and in other ways. Well, to do that, you have to solve certain problems. There's a bunch of them. And I listed 6 basic problems. I know there are more. Sustenance, energy, health, resources, communications, and transport. Well, what do entrepreneurs do? Technically, they solve problems, and they solve problems in a way that adds market value. And so I took those basic overall problems and went down and started attaching to those things that might that are being built right now that could create an investment opportunity down the road. And so, again, nano and biotechnology, better filtration, purification tools. I mean, there are people building things right now that, for example, that would make better filtration of water and purification of water. Better agricultural technologies that are useful on Earth right now to enhance people's lives and help feed people and give them a better water supply. I think a lot of these technologies down the road could be also useful in a burgeoning space settlement. There's things going on with the genetic engineering that might help the health of future space settlers. You're going to need energy, so photovoltaics is just the beginning. Better heat exchange, maybe thorium fission, space solar power in some way. I've even seen something that somebody's developing for clothing and for textiles called a microfiber nano generator, which actually generate power on a smaller scale within the clothing just from your own body movements while wearing the clothing. And they're developing this so you could, you know, recharge your cell phone or your iPod or something. But if you can incorporate that into a spacesuit, this could be very helpful. And so all of a sudden, when you start looking in that direction, you start seeing all sorts of opportunities for potential space investments in the long run, but will also make you nice profits and enhance human life in the short run. And this is, and in my view, this is how you attract those smaller seed and early stage investors and get them at least come nibbling around the edges of what the space community might have to offer.
Tom, I'm going to interrupt you for a moment.
Go ahead.
I do this occasionally when a really important news flash comes my way from some of the news services. And
okay.
I was not aware of this. This is very sad news. This is about a real dear personal friend and a friend of the space show. I did not know this, but Jim Benson, who used to have space dev, passed away this morning.
Oh, dear.
So I'll read the note. I just got it from the California Space Authority.
Please.
I knew he had had a stroke, and I thought he was recovering better, and I'm very sorry to hear this. This is from CSA Sacramento. The California Space Authority is deeply saddened by this morning's passing of Jim Benson, a former member of the board of directors and a founder of the California-based space venturing company SpaceDev. The space enterprise community lost one of its great visionaries this morning, stated Andrea Seastrand, executive director of CSA. Jim Benson tested, convention, and developed cutting-edge hybrid propulsion and advanced structural systems. His 30 years of entrepreneurial experience and out-of-the-box thinking will be sadly missed. On behalf of the staff and members of CSA, I send our condolences to the entire Benson family and to all of those who knew and worked with him. And Jim was a frequent guest on the show prior to his stroke, a good friend. I used to see him at conferences. He was about my age or just a little bit older. And I'm very sorry to hear that. And our love and support goes to his family, and I know he's been away from Space Dev for about 2 years, but...
Yeah, he started his Dream Chaser project. He started a new company.
But, yeah, I'm sure there are people there that still very close to Jim, and that's very sad news. So I'm sorry to put that on you on your show, but that
was
worth interrupting.
I'm reading it now, the press release. He was 63. I guess he was diagnosed in 2007 with a glioblastoma multiforme brain tumor.
That I didn't know, but...
Yeah. We've been fighting that, and I didn't know that either.
No, I just thought he was trying to recover from a massive stroke.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we lost a good entrepreneur. I know he was controversial. I know people said all sorts of things about him. I know he was sharp-tongued and, would go after what he... thought were injustices in the industry. He certainly spoke out against doing only government contract work, although later years Space Dev evolved into doing only government contract work because there were no markets on the commercial side. I think he will be missed, and he'll certainly be missed as a space show guest.
He will be missed, and I think in the end he will also be vindicated from a lot of things.
Absolutely. Well, for the vision,
I'm sipping some wine right now, so here's to you, Jim, and
absolutely, and Tom and I will dedicate this show to your memory.
I have no problem to that.
Tom, and is the overall broader market ready to accept and incorporate and behave, which is a fundamental word here, and act upon expanding the definition of a space opportunity over and above the launch industry and suborbital tourism and the traditionals that get all the attention?
I'm not sure if that's the right question. Is the industry ready for a change in definition of what it means?
Well, or the financial industry.
I'm trying to, change the definition a little bit myself. So what I'm doing is essentially in kind of an educational work. It's almost evangelical in that regard, starting with the presentation that I did this year. I'm trying, because we have we've artificially kind of defined ourselves as space being way out here somewhere, and all the other industries being on another side of a column, and they're space isn't competing well with these other people for money and resources and attention. And I think we have to get ourselves out of that mindset and go back to the investment community and even the other technology communities and say, look, engineers and scientists have understood for years that space development and all the things we do out there is very much a cross-disciplinary activity. It's time for businessmen, entrepreneurs, and investors to also figure this out, that some of the high-tech things that we're building to enhance people's lives on Earth may one day have a space component, and maybe it's something we should look at. One of my favorite poster children for this is a firm I've been working with off and on in the Northwest. They're building something called an axial flux electric motor. It just basically is a mass driver turned in a circle. There's a lot of rare earth magnets in it, and there's a other electromagnet component. But this thing cranks at incredible torque and not a lot of power. It has one moving part, and the builders of this thing conceived it as being inside of electric cars and used for regenerative braking and even used in windmill generation. Well, first time I looked at it, I saw it on a Mars rover. Because it's ideal. It doesn't need maintenance. It has one moving part. That's exactly what you need.
How is it related to space again?
It's, again, it'd be used as a form of motive power on or something like a Mars rover or a lunar roving vehicle.
So this is, of course, what you also talked about at ISDC.
Yeah. In terms of giving examples,
right?
And I gave an example earlier of the electro regenerative clothing. You could incorporate that same technology into spacesuits.
So can you tell any difference in reception from the people coming in from Europe and Asia versus America to what you're talking about? Because our sense of commercialism and entrepreneurism is probably very different.
Well, I got a few aha moments in people's faces. I saw that. And, of course, I got it more in the American audience. But it was – I gave them something to think about. They actually, you know, they asked some good questions, and they pondered that a little more.
Ted.
Yeah, in the American audience, I think I actually changed some guy's life because there's a guy that you and I know that's been a guest on the show, and he was sitting in the back room. You were there. And he does a lot of – he's got a consulting practice. He does business development, and he works down in North Carolina. He's trying to get new space and high-tech business development going on, mostly in his state, and he moves around as well and does other places.
Is this Jeff?
Yeah, Jeff Krukin.
And you changed his life?
Yeah, because he said, because when I started talking about the smart clothing and the other things, his eyes lit up because everybody's been counting out North Carolina because they were largely just a textile industry state, and they thought the textile industry was dying. And I just gave him a way to revitalize the textile industry and by merging it with high tech. And his brain started working overtime, and he's probably doing something about that right now.
Well, he's got to step beyond a couple of other things and a couple of other technology influences that he's surrounding with. That would be my take. I should get Jeff back on the show to talk
about. I'm just talking about his reaction.
Yeah, no,
not what he does with it.
No, he needs to. Yeah, I agree with you. I'm glad he had that reaction because that may open him up to more opportunities. And he's a good guy. And I guess he could do furniture in North Carolina, big on furniture too.
That was the other one. Yeah.
I don't know how you'd launch it into space, but
yeah,
you know, that is out there. You have this note from Ted in Austin, Texas, and Ted says, "I know you're part of the Space Investment Summit, and I'm wondering how many companies there are on the peripheral of technology like you're talking about right now versus directly responding to something in the space industry."
Okay, I have to maybe I can find the list again. It's actually a pretty good mix. It's a pretty good.
Have they made the list final? Because they wouldn't announce it even though they knew it was final on my show.
Well, I'm trying to find. I've got so many different pieces of just attendees. I have to go look for it. Maybe by the next segment I can tell you exactly. I know I've got a download here of the latest list of who's doing what. Let's see if it's on the promo sheet here, registration. Okay. So you've got people doing launch related stuff. And some are making parts. I've got at least, let's see, 1, 2, 3. I've got 4 launch-oriented, rocket-oriented companies.
Can you name them yet? Or are they?
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. You know, I can. X-Core Aerospace is presenting, Garvey Spacecraft Corporation, and an interesting company called Digital Solid State Propulsion.
I'm not familiar with that one.
They make what they call, they're patented. They have something called Smart Energetic Materials that they use to make with solid propellants. They make thrusters, essentially, that are electrically controlled, extinguishable, very safe to work with, and they're capable of multiple ignitions.
Interesting.
Yeah. Astrobotic Technology, they're making commercial robotic services on the moon, asteroids, and beyond. Pumpkin, Inc. is the company. They have what they call a CubeSat kit product family. And they're developing a miniature imaging satellite constellation, an order of magnitude. What they claim is an order of magnitude less cost than current platforms. Your friends at Celestis will be joining us. And here's something on the edge that I was talking about, a company called NYX, Nix or Nikes. They're developing wearable health monitoring systems.
Okay.
Okay. True Carbon is using real-time scientific satellite data and in-situ ground sensors to provide 100% verification of carbon being traded in international markets. So they want to tap into the cap and trade market and allow you to verify that your cap and trade deals are working the way they're supposed to be working. And they will also sell carbon credits in a retail mass market and use their technology to support a complete new social network connecting environmentally aware companies and people. But it starts with all these satellite data and ground sensors.
You have a question from Bill in Virginia.
Okay.
I guess actually it's addressed to us both, but since you're involved in the summit and I'm not, it's really going to fall on your shoulders. And he says, guys, I thought Mastin was presenting. I'm wondering if your Space Cynics attacks on Mastin prevented them from presenting at Space Investment Summit 5.
Actually, no. I can say that for a fact. They were on the list. We had 14 companies or 15 companies apply for 9 spots, and it was just a tough choice. And we had to rate these companies at a lot of different angles, and so we ended up with 9 companies, and then we have 2 alternates, and one of the alternates is in fact Mastin. So if something happens at the very, very last minute, and one of these 9 can't make it, then you know they could still do it, but the Mastin will be there, and they'll have a display in the exhibit hall.
In response to this person's comments, Bill from Virginia.
Sure.
Do you want to say anything about our cynics' comments that went not really necessarily to Mastin, but I guess they were to Mastin, to the company, not to anybody individually in the company.
Right.
Do you want to comment on that?
I don't know what to say at this point. I mean, that was kind of a... I mean, I know what Old Space Cadet was doing when he wrote his post and he recommended Mastin for a walking eagle. And we all agreed it has to be unanimous, and we did. And they all stand behind that, but it's because, and really only because what they were doing is not any different from what a lot of other companies we've seen off and on do over many years in talking about, in suggesting that a product or service they're developing is actually already developed and ready to go. And that's really where the problem was.
Right. I mean, Old Space Cadet found on their website that they were advertising and selling and marketing that which they were incapable of doing, had no hardware for, had no experience for, no track record for. So he posted a Space Cynics post on that and said, come on, guys, you know, don't, you know, market the rhetoric. Get real and be realistic and, you know, market and sell, you know, I don't remember the terms he used, but it was based on what you can really do. Kind of like what we're seeing now with people who buy houses because they don't have to fill out a form and be checked, and all of a sudden they can't pay the piper, and we've got problems across the business. You know, be accurate, you know, sell what you can do, not, you know, a pipe dream. So that was the essence of his thing, and a Walking Eagle Award was nominated, and all of us did accept that. I think the discussion got blown way out of proportion by one or two individuals who responded with very, unsavory personal attacks on Old Space Cadet, and then the conversations, you know, digressed from, look, don't poison the well. I mean, when I did the Space Investment Summit show with you and the 4 other people, part of the whole purpose of your summits that you're doing each year is to clean up and make the new space industry more bankable, if that's the right word to use.
Exactly, and I think
and not
better every time.
Yeah, and not to poison the well with stuff that doesn't exist or anything else. I mean, there's another company that we didn't do it on Cynics, but advertises that they can, you know, fly to 300,000 feet and da 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 da. And my business card goes higher when I fly on Southwest than anything they've ever launched. So I got hold of a business publication in the state where these guys are located, and they're all good friends of mine, and they still are. And the guy wrote a business article who was ignorant of anything, and I took him to task for being, you know, a sloppy, uninformed, ignorant journalist that perpetuates nonsense and BS. And the journalist actually had the decency to contact me, and he went in and corrected his article. And again, not to slam the company, but to help clean up this industry of dramatic and exaggerated rhetoric that has no rhyme or reason in reality. You know, in most industries, that's almost stock fraud, right? Investment fraud.
It would be, yeah.
And here Mastin wants to, you know, present at the very place that is trying really hard to make NewSpace credible in the eyes of the professional markets. And this was on their website, an old space cadet called them on the carpet. It's too bad it got blown out of proportion with a lot of personal attacks, although there was a lot of fun in it for a while, but, it's over and done with, and Mastin did go and correct some language on their website. And
that was Mike Melling who did that, and I consider Mike Melling a good friend still. And he,
well, yeah, and he knows what he's doing.
5 years, and he and I, in fact, are on the board of directors of Space Frontier Foundation together. We
are
work together all the time.
Are you still talking to each other?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. He was, the last time I talked to him, he was changing the language as I was talking to him, so...
Actually, I just got an IM from Old Space Cadet, and he says an easy way to describe it is just saying the thread related to the ego was hijacked into a personal attack.
Yeah, ad hominem is the major term there, yes.
So it's up there for people who want to go see it. You know, Shubber doesn't take anything down from the site, and I think you can scroll down four or five
archive
posts.
All.
Yeah, and it'll be there. And also Old Space Cadet put a screenshot of their website up there, anticipating that they would ultimately change it so that everybody could see what he was talking about. So that's what that was all about, and it's too bad that it was taken personally and out of context, because nobody on the cynic side directed it at any one individual and meant to do personal attacks. It's only an effort with a little bit of cynicism and humor to call attention to not selling rhetoric and nonsense and trying to get the industry to self-police itself to what they can do and what's real and what's obtainable.
That's right, David. We're doing God's work in the world.
Well, many space advocates think they're doing God's work, don't they?
I'm kidding, everybody.
Is that attitude something you picked up in Scotland at IAC, or is that sort of unique to New Space in America?
I think it's unique to New Space in America.
You really do? You didn't pick that up?
No. I think a lot of, again, a lot of the more smoke and mirrors type of New Space outfits, you didn't see them represented at IAC. They're not going to spend that kind of coin to take a trip, you know, across eight time zones.
Well, absolutely. But, well, you know, I wish I had been there. It would have probably been a lot of fun, a lot of new people.
It would have gone nuts.
Was ESA highly represented there?
I'm sorry?
ESA, was it highly represented there?
Yeah, there was good representation there. As I said, I had lunch with the head of ESA, so I didn't ask him that. So.
Personal one-on-one?
Not really. I mean, you're sitting at a table with, you know, eight or ten other people. But the conversation was pretty, you know, fast-paced.
He made a presentation at SmallSat, a keynote about 3 years ago, and boy, at the time, he was really drumming on how important education was in the European market, and that they turn over their personnel education-wise every few years, and they just have to have really high-quality education that the people who are already at ESA are already behind the eight ball versus what people are learning in school and coming out of school with. I don't know if that's what he talked about, but he is a big, big space education promoter and seems like a very good guy.
Mm-hmm.
We're about to have another break.
Okay.
And when we come back, I would like to ask you if the number one topic discussed on the space show made it to IAC were their panels and panels galore and working models, and was there a tabernacle for the Church of Space Solar Power there? Everybody stay right where you are. Back in 2 minutes. Don't shoot the messenger. Have some fun, people.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with The Space Show. Your support of The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support The Space Show button. Your contribution will help The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to The Space Show is tax deductible. The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with The Space Show. Your support of The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support The Space Show button. Your contribution will help The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to The Space Show is tax deductible.
I'm Dr. David Livingston, creator and host of The Space Show, and I would like to share my vision with you for not only this radio program, but for space development. Space should be like any other place we choose to visit, work in, or call our home. It should be just another destination, like Tahiti, Hawaii, or any place available to us right now on Earth. When this vision becomes reality, we will be spacefaring in our culture, our economy, our society, and in our lives. Our world will be vastly improved by countless space-related benefits, transforming our lives both in space and right here on Earth. And the Space Show is helping to make this vision a global reality. And welcome back, everybody. You are listening to The Space Show. I'm your host, David Livingston. Our guest today, Tom Olson. We're getting a factual analysis of what went on in Glasgow, Scotland at the IAC 2008 last week. And we're now going to go to church with Tom, the Church of Space Solar Power at IAC. What was the church like there, or was it even there?
Well, yeah, it was there, but you'd hardly notice. I mean, it was one voice in a chorus. And realized that other than the entrepreneurial track in which I had to spend most of my time out of loyalty, if nothing else, to those who ran it. and there were very good tracks and some great presentations. It means I got to miss out on seeing a bunch of other stuff. This is still largely a very technical-oriented conference. And although I said I got to present for 15 minutes, a lot of tracks, people only got to present for 5 or 7 minutes. They got to just show their slides and hope people would download their paper later. But they're very technical papers on specific types of things involved in various areas of the industry. And so, again, we had technical sessions on radiation and health issues, environmental control, smart materials, adaptive structures, future space transportation systems. There were hundreds of these things, and they were all separate tracks, and they had maybe a dozen different presentations within each track. and there were sessions devoted to space-based solar power.
So were they grounded?
The luminaries of that movement, John Mankins, who's done a lot of great work on the technical side, was there.
Yeah, well, that's not the church.
And he did some presenting, and he also ran a track. And I managed to sit in on a couple of presentations very briefly before being elsewhere. But it was very technically oriented, and I didn't see a lot of the religiosity that can be associated with all this at U.S. conferences.
Well, you wouldn't see it if John ran the group, because John is a legit, very, very professional, high-quality scientist engineer and has his head screwed on right.
Mm-hmm.
Is not part of the church of that or anything else. He's a grounded reality guy. Just so that the listeners don't come down the road and attack me and say heresy and everything else, I'm going to say again what I say on almost every discussion on this, that space solar power has its challenges, and at the present time, it is not economically viable, and most of the discussions ignore that, or they have such theoretical numbers for claiming economic viability, even down to 1 cent per kilowatt hour, that it's a joke. And so what I do is hound on, you know, how theoretical all of this is, because there is no hardware, there is no transportation system, there is no way to get the power into the grid, there is no dispersion system. I mean, on and on and on. Does that mean that there shouldn't be a serious demo plant attempted to see if the technology can be proven out and to see what the costs are? I'm all for that. And look, government wastes so much more money than what it would cost to do something constructive like this. I mean, who even wants to think of what government is blowing money on with corruption and everything else? This is a drop in the bucket to do something valuable. Would it help us maybe 20 years down the road, 30 years? Maybe. I'm not smart enough to know the answer to that, but it should be done as a demo thing. I have no problem with that. Let's find out what technology works. Let's get some real numbers put behind it, and stop dealing in a world of theoretical nonsense to what is maybe theoretically realistic. I mean, nobody knows.
Now, ironically, in a small scale, I could see space-based solar power useful in providing a short-term or an interim or just a startup power infrastructure to areas that have none.
Absolutely, like parts of Africa, for example.
Or parts of Mars.
Within space, absolutely.
Yeah, when the first, you know, large scale Mars settlement arrives, having a space based solar power set up in place waiting for them, and all they have to do is set up the Rectenna farm and aim it.
Well,
when they get there, they've got instant power infrastructure.
And Mike Sneed, who is a first rate engineer, is working on an energy analysis assumption grid of what's available globally over the coming decades, probably out to 100 years. Hopefully Mike will be able to talk about that on the show when he finishes his work. But, you know, there may come a day in the future, either through political incompetence, we certainly know that, or through growth, or through waste, or through bungling, that we don't have access to energy. And space solar power is the only viable, or one of the only viable ways to get power. At that point, you don't really care what you're paying for it. You need power.
Mm-hmm.
So by all means, you know, try to figure it out. But, I mean, this week, and Tom, I sent you three of them between yesterday and today,
email,
where, you know, from different people applauding each other in the church for 1 cent per kilowatt hour on nonsense that wouldn't even get you out of a sandbox.
Yeah, I know. It's just amazing, because I saw an actual analysis that some investment people did at the very first Space Investment Summit, which was in New York about a year and a half ago. And somebody did a presentation on this, it was part of their presentation, and the analysis they did from a purely institutional and venture capital standpoint was that for the plans they were seeing to pay for themselves and bring profit to the investors, they'd have to charge some ungodly sum of money, like 85 cents a kilowatt, to get the power to the grid so the investors could actually make the money. And nobody's going to pay 85 cents a kilowatt when you can pay 4.8 off peak in New Mexico at night right now.
Well, I don't pay that in San Francisco, but
it's a little higher. I mean, I'm probably paying nine to 11 cents.
Yeah, that's about what
I
pay.
Peak. That's peak in Pennsylvania. You know, so. But the point is, the other point is, and I'm writing a series on this for the Cynics blog.
Yeah, you just got a question about that from Kim in Denver, wanting to know when your series that you alluded to earlier is going to be available.
Hopeful. Probably closer to the end of the month than now. I'm still catching up. I just spent a week in Scotland, and then I spent a week in a bunch of other work, and I've been getting over an illness. But I'm working on it diligently, and hopefully soon. I mean, I've got to be at Space Investment Summit next week, so probably after that you'll start seeing this.
Can you give us a glimpse of what to expect?
Well, the first part is economics, of course. I mean, Shubber touched on it a little bit, and you've touched on it a lot, and I'm going to try to give a few more details in that regard. In fact, one of the things I was just about to mention is that I don't think the grid as it exists right now can handle space solar power and influx of it, even if it was cheap. We have infrastructure problems in America anyway. You saw the bridge collapse in Minnesota. It's not just bridges and roads. Infrastructure is a lot of things. And our power grid is also part of that infrastructure, and it's also getting frayed around the edges. And actually, it takes a lot of abuse, it gets a lot of pounding, and it can't take much more. Like Scotty in Star Trek, you know, Captain, I cannot take the pounding. If you push her much harder, she'll blow. And that's exactly what's going to happen to the grid. If you all of a sudden you set up a huge antenna farm and started plugging a bunch of space solar power in there, it's probably going to do more harm than good.
Well, can you plug
in our current grid as it exists? Means you're going to have to beef up the grid. How many billions are we going to have to spend to do that?
Well, does it matter where you plug it into the grid? Or there's
no.
So there aren't stronger points than others.
There might be stronger points than others, but it still ultimately all filters throughout the system. And it's a huge tightrope that you walk.
Let's have Congress vote on it.
Yeah, well, they can vote to change, you know, the law of gravity if they want. It doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Hey, they might vote for it, though.
9.6 meters per second. We'll just change the law a little bit, and everything will be fine.
Yeah, don't even get me started back on that anymore. So overall, space solar power, has its time come? Do you think it will be passed by because of advance? I mean, Earth technologies are not standing still.
Series. I'm trying to break this into chunks. I could write one long treatise on it, but you'd fall asleep halfway through. So I tried to to sex it up and do it in smaller pieces. So one is the overall gross economics. The second piece will be about how I think conventional terrestrial technologies are being developed so fast, it's just going to pass the whole system by with a lot less money and none of it public. The third thing is a lot of the international and domestic drama of politics and the give and take and the tug of war that's going to go on to try to make even the simplest things happen. And then of course, then the fourth part is a little more philosophical. It has to do with what I think is space-based solar power systems, as I see them now, are on the wrong side of history. Things are changing at a tremendous rate in that big hierarchical structures are starting to break down. And they're becoming more democratized. And I think the grid is going to become more democratized as well. When you have solar power panels that you can, you know, literally paint on your house and set up your own windmill and do whatever you want, you can plug it back into the grid and actually give back to the grid some of what you're taking. And everybody starts doing this. That's a completely different type of model than a hierarchical system where you have a lot of key power plants and you have, you know, this hierarchical system of doing things, and they just put it out there, and you're just a user. The internet changed everything in that regard, and that kind of model is starting to propagate all across the planet.
So, Earth-based technologies are not standing still, waiting
absolutely
only
not
for
moving,
advancements in SSP.
Moving faster than these guys can write papers.
Well, and in addition, any technology that helps space solar power has a much more dramatic impact on terrestrial technology.
Yeah, and it'll be deployed faster, and it'll make more money. I mean, there's a couple of companies in the Silicon Valley area right now that have gotten $100 million or more in in new funding to move forward with their development. They're getting money fast and furious, and they're making products right now.
Why do you think so many realistic people hold on to, you know, the value stream of space solar power in light of some of the things we've just been talking about? What is the catch that makes them think they're economic, especially when there are no, there is no launch infrastructure?
Think it's economic, David. They don't think about the economics of it. They think about the sexiness of it. It's space. It's high technology.
Well,
the reason we build space solar power satellites, the real reason, is so we can get lots and lots of people into space to build them. And we'll build communities. And we'll have children. And we'll build schools. And we'll do all these other things. That's just the hook to get the new industrial base out there and get it going, to get human beings out into space and create the next wave of human civilization.
What?
And that's the real agenda behind that, and which is fine, but I just don't – but the economics of space solar power is going to really start crumbling down around them shortly, and we're just going to have to find another reason.
Well, I'll tell you, it's pretty hard to do something like you just talked about when you can't get to the job site.
Well, yeah, no, we've already spent $100 billion on the International Space Station.
Well, here,
and that is a fraction of the size of just one of the big space solar power satellites.
Well, here, you just got this question. Hey, guys, don't forget SpaceX in Los Angeles. They've proven themselves now to be viable. So Falcon 9 will soon be on board, and we'll lower the cost, and Falcon 9s can take solar power hardware to space cost effectively. What have you to say about that, Mr. Olson?
Well, is it $10 a pound? Because that's what you're going to need. Yeah, I mean, I sat there at ISDC in May and listened to Elon Musk himself say that he's not going to do much to lower launch costs from a direct way through his work. He knows he can make some improvements and efficiencies around the margins in production costs and things like that. But he's kind of backing off from that idea that launch costs themselves per se are going to be dramatically hugely lowered as a result of what he does. Now down the road, you know, there may be, we'll see. I mean, he's launched one Falcon 1 successfully. One out of four.
Yeah, it's a 25%.
Got it done, and thank God, God bless him. You know, I'm a big supporter of Elon Musk. Will he lower launch costs to make space solar power satellites feasible? Will he make lower launch costs significantly to basically enable a project that's bigger than 10 Hoover dams? I'm just not seeing it. We're talking hundreds, maybe thousands of launches to build a single platform.
What do you say to people who say, you're not with the program, you're too negative? Because you have to hear it like other people who talk reality like this all the time hear it. How do you respond to someone who says stuff like that to you?
Show me what the program is that I'm not with.
Okay, let's...
Because I don't see any programs happening.
Okay, let's go to Space
That's
Cynics.
Supportable. Actual programs that are funded.
Let's go to Space Cynics a minute. And I put a post up on the – I posted Shover's interview from a week ago on there. And that interview is much more comprehensive than just space solar power by a long shot.
I know.
Okay, so – but the whole thing is up there, and you can hear it. And there's some discussion about a peripheral topic about science and educational reporting in America. But then comes the comments to me, which I put up there, about space solar power, and that I've listened to the first hour or so of Shover's comments, and he's not helpful to the cause. And that was the note to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I fire back, why is he supposed to be helpful to the cause rather than factual, rather than truthful, rather than analytical? What is this? You promote a cause and support a cause regardless of what the facts may be or your analysis or your conclusions?
Well,
is that what you're supposed to be doing or what we're all to do?
That's it, David. Obviously, the guy who left that comment...
Well, that happens to be
looked at the banner at the top of the blog, a view of alt space by those who don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Well, this is Mike, and he doesn't drink the Kool-Aid, so he fired back, and he wanted the bullet points taken out of Schubert's comments or by someone else to say what are the economic arguments against it so he can attempt to refute them one by one. And, and so that's why I posted it. I said, I need help. Someone who really thinks that you can do this, both post the bullet points of why the economics aren't in favor of this one by one, and let's see if somebody can refute them in a technical, economic, factual discussion, rather than going after the messenger or saying you're not helping the cause. Actually, I would contend Schubert does help the cause.
I would come up with some solid researched evidence that can be refuted by others, that can be peer-reviewed, that shows categorically that space-based solar power systems, even with the incredible cost to build them, can still bring power back to the world economically and fit in with current grid prices right now and make a profit.
Give
me that rather than just doing a bunch of arm-waving PowerPoint slides. Give me that economic analysis. I throw it back on them.
Well,
the proof is on them, not us.
They're
the ones who are making these proposals. I'm sorry.
And I would say that Schubert is helping the movement by forcing it to deal with reality and
right.
hard
Absolutely.
Numbers.
Absolutely.
And analysis. I had another guest on the show, and this just came out a clear blue, okay? And this is Elfin Way, and I probably am his first name is Nader, the professor from the University of Miami, and he was on just the other day, and I apologize. I'm sure I did his name wrong again. And he was asked about space solar power, what he thought of it, and he didn't think much of it. And he started citing some economic reasons. And then he made the comment, and he said, see, you know, the problem is people need to crunch the numbers, mm-hmm. and they don't do it. And then we talked about what kind of skills it takes to crunch numbers.
I know, it's hard.
But this is what he said, you can't just do due diligence on the management or the corporate books, or are they in compliance with the SEC or something on that. You got to find out if the numbers of their vehicles means that they'll get off the ground, or is it a walking eagle?
And this has been, and this segues to an interesting kind of side topic, because we've been talking for years on this show about how a lot of the space entrepreneurial startup companies often have brilliant engineers, but very few people that know much about the business side of things. We've railed on this for years, and we've finally gotten some people to wake up a little bit, and they're starting to do better business planning, and they're starting to get some of the better business modeling into what they're doing, and some of the flakier types are falling by the wayside. So I think we've done some good work in this regard, but then now it comes, we turn around again. And so now we're finally getting everybody to do their own internal due diligence on the business side of things, make sure they're telling the right story before they go to the investors. But now the time is again coming around where, hey, now we got to turn around and look back at the technology again. Can they really do what they're claiming they can do? Or are we making too many assumptions?
Well, I think Schubert does help the movement by holding it to a level of accountability. And if you want to make sure that space solar power gets built, you're going to have to make sure it flies economically, or there's another valid reason to pursue it. And if you're la-la land all the time and you won't crunch the numbers and you don't know what it costs to do the project, my contention is it's probably not healthy for the movement, and it probably will never do anything more than be a church of space solar power.
Well, as I said just a few minutes ago, I mean, the last people I saw who tried to crunch the numbers suggested that the only way this space solar power would be profitable is if they charge 85 cents a kilowatt.
Well, I
concur.
And
who's going to pay that?
Well,
without an act of Congress forcing them to.
Well,
they actually tongue-in-cheek suggested.
Crunch the numbers.
Yeah.
That's what I say. Speaking of cynics, old space cadet says, could it be that some non-technical people can't tell the difference between a political conclusion and a technical conclusion, and they equate the cause with being able to do anything if someone thinks it? Well, possibly. Technical reality is ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Old space cadet actually wrote a really good paper that he posted on cynics about dorky space cadet behavior. Why do really smart people do some pretty dumb things? And people can Google that on probably just on Google for dorky space cadet or on Cynic, but it's a first-rate paper. This is a hard question to answer. Why do so many hard people, smart people, do so many stupid things?
Because they just want it so much, they're willing to overlook something.
Hard.
I got every bit, you know, half the business plans that cross my desk that people want me to look at always have one or two pieces of something we ubiquitously call an obtainium. It's always one little tiny piece of technology to kind of sneak in there. It's really a key thing and potentially a showstopper, but that thing has to be developed before the rest of the plan can flow. And it's everywhere. And that's a result of the kind of mindset you're talking about. That willingness to accept, it's just one little piece of dream technology we haven't quite developed yet, but by the time we're ready to deploy this business plan, that'll be there.
In your entrepreneurial session at IAC, this is not as noticeable there as what it is here?
No. Most of these guys come from, there were a handful of people from the new space community who did come and either just attended to network, and a couple people presented. But most of these people who are from different parts of the more conventional community around the world, and these were solid, industry people, feet on the ground. But this is, investors and investment bank people and consultants and, a handful of entrepreneurs.
Leonard in Nashville says, given the discussion in your comments today, Tom, do you think your space investment summits are making progress in cleaning up the rhetoric that often makes new space seem silly?
Honestly, and I'm saying this honestly and not to make a pitch, but I'll tell you, the group of entrepreneurs that we have presenting at this summit this year, this time, are the best ever. We're doing better and better every time, not only in focusing on what we think are really solid companies, but at the same time we're attracting more and more really solid companies to apply for a spot. And so I think we're developing a little bit of street cred, as they say, in this regard, and I hope this continues.
And people can still attend this, I assume. It's space.
Absolutely.
What is it, spaceinvestmentsummit.com?
I believe so, yes. Yes.
So people go check it online. It's in Los Angeles at the Lux Hotel. It's actually Beverly Hills or West
Bel Air.
Bel Air. Right there at the Sunset Strip exit off of the 405. Mm-hmm. You can't miss it. And it's October 15th. And if you're in the L.A. area, you should attend, and if you're able to get down to the LA area, this is worth visiting and worth attending. So spaceinvestmentsummit.com. I think you can do everything online. If not, send me a note and I'll direct you to the people who can help you. And you're going to be there, right?
Absolutely. I'm running a panel on value added services.
Really?
Yeah.
Pretty. That's one of three panels, right?
Yeah.
Pretty good. Do you know what you're going to say yet?
I'm still. I have an extended weekend, so I'm going to be working. We just had our conference call for the panel like today, and so all of us have been busy. But so people haven't even built their slides yet. But we've pretty much figured out at least what my guests on the panel will have to say. And now I'm going to be working on my own comments in light of that. And it'll be together by the time we all gather.
And it's just one day on the 15th, right?
It's one long, excruciating, but very, very fun, jam-packed thrill ride of a day, yes.
And evening, correct?
And evening.
Okay. So actually, people, you should be there the night of the 14th. Right?
I think there's a no. I think it's just one day, and there's a reception at the end.
So but to be there when it starts early in the morning, you need to probably...
You probably should get there the night before.
The night before, unless you live in the area.
Unless you live in the area.
And then if you live far in the area, you either need to probably start driving over there in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
Because the 405 is the freeway from hell, as we like to call it.
Yeah, that's true.
We're coming up on our next break, and when we come back, we're into our final segment for today's Space Show program with Tom Olson, And I'd like to hear some more about the IAC. I would like to have gone. I want to ask you about, you know, who you network with and, you know, talking to some of the people from Asia and from Europe, over talking to the kind of people we meet at, say, ISDC or Space Frontier Foundation. There's got to be a different interest level and focus, and I want to explore that with you. Okay. So everybody hold on and back in 2 minutes.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a space-faring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible. The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a space-faring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Space Show. This is our final segment. Our guest today, Tom Olson. So, Tom, networking at the IAC, say networking at ISDC. Here we're, you know, if we got a project, we're usually trying to raise some money for it, or maybe we're talking, you know, pretty parochial U.S. ITAR control or, you know, a discussion like that or something. What goes on networking there? Are people able to make investments? Is that, something that happens with the non-Americans or how are things, you know, focused differently?
Again, I think it's a completely different focus in that. Once again, up until this last year, this last conference, the IAC conference was strictly an exchange of scientific and engineering and policy knowledge amongst people who are already involved in the big heavy industries and the government space programs and a lot of the, you know, the high budget things that are going on in the world. The entrepreneurial side has never been represented before. This is a real new thing. And I think these tracks that I attended, at least, I think they're very successful in that regard. I think the committee will be happy with that. I must say one of the guys on the committee that got this set up is Paul Eckert from Boeing. He's also one of the lead guys working on Space Investment Summit. I've been working with him for about a year and a half now, and I think he did some astounding work getting that thing going. I want to just give him his props, you know. Shout out to Paul.
Absolutely. As we come into this this final segment, what, you know, if Colony Fund were up and running today, how would you be managing the money?
Well, if you actually, you know, that's a good question. If you, I think if you read between the lines of, you downloaded my paper from IAC and you.
By the way, can we access that paper? Can listeners get to it?
Yeah, I think you can. Actually, I'm not sure quite how to do it myself. I haven't done it yet, but. I think it is available. If not, let me know. You know, if people are really interested in reading my paper, I'd be happy to send it out there, or I'll find another place on the
Well, why don't you do this? Why don't you send it to me?
Okay.
And then when I archive this show, I'll put in the write up and say, those of you who would like to read Tom's paper, send me a note and I'll send you the paper.
Okay. But if you read between the lines of that paper, it really does suggest a potential investment strategy long term for an exchange traded fund of that nature. And so this is something I've been working on for several years now. Ever since I started hitting a wall of what to really do with a fund like that, I was almost ready to pull the trigger, and I realized this is not going to work for a lot of reasons that you and I have discussed on this program.
Absolutely.
But I've been getting a lot of talk and a lot of pressure from people. Maybe it's time to look at resurrecting this project, and I have been looking at it very seriously. And this paper is really obviously a result.
Do you?
I raise some eyebrows, but I've got, the idea flow is starting again.
Do you have your ISDC paper? Can you send that too?
I didn't do a paper for ISDC. I just did the slideshow and my personal talk.
Okay.
And that ended up in the paper for IAC.
We got this economic meltdown. We've kind of been joking about what's going on, for the show. How do you see this affecting the private entrepreneurial space community, and also what our governments are going to be doing with the civil space community? Is there even going to be money for space?
Well, like I say, that's the same week that the bailout package was passed with all that extra pork tied onto it.
Right.
That same week, an authorization bill for NASA was passed that gave them $2 billion extra dollars. So their budget went from $18 billion to $20.5 billion, I think.
What about for capital-hungry, entrepreneurial, startup, smaller companies? Are they going to find it in the private markets?
That's harder to say. There's a credit crunch right now that may not necessarily affect the sweet spot seed and early stage investors that I talked about. But there's always a flight to quality during times like this. So it's kind of hard to say yet. I'm not going to. I can give you better tail on that after Space Investment Summit. We'll see what the turnout's like. I mean, the turnout numbers are pretty close to average for what we've been getting at previous summits, and there's usually a lot of extra signups at the door at the last second. So I'm not going to make any projections until after the show. But
are you planning to do an end of the year summary with us?
Oh, I would love to.
Well, I have end of December dates available. I'll email you after the show. But this would be a really good topic,
mm-hmm.
because we'll know who the president's going to be. We'll know what Congress looks like. We will have had a lot of transition rhetoric that's blown in our face. And we'll have a much better feel of clearly what's happening in the private sector and the credit markets. We'll even know if we're still alive. Or bailing wire is being used at all levels.
But at least in the next budget cycle, NASA's not going anywhere. They've actually gotten more money than they had before, which probably means that COTS isn't going anywhere. And so they'll be okay.
Yeah, I would think COTS, all of that is going to probably stay consistent.
So at least for the next fiscal year, they're, all that's in good shape. Where the rest of the industry goes, it's really going to be tough to say. There's going to be a lot of scrambling going on. And fact is, for space projects in the public mind, when all they're concentrating on is, hey, am I going to keep my job next year?
Absolutely.
Space tourism is the last thing on their mind.
I think they're going to really be, investors are really going to be looking hard and fast at quality, time in, time out, return on investment, some of the real fundamentals. And it'll be interesting to see what more risky, speculative, out-of-the-box space investments can do.
Well, which also means that that crossover and on the margin type of companies, like the kinds of things I've been talking about, might get a second look, in that you're doing something that will definitely add value right now and make money for your portfolio right now, but could down the road be expanded to a space component. I know it's not a lot, and the people who are involved in launch tourism and spaceports, they don't want to hear that, but at least it's helping build an infrastructure of sorts in other areas that we're going to need anyway. I mean, things will slow down, but they won't stop.
Jane in Dallas, Texas says, you've mentioned spaceports several times. Do you think they're commercially viable? What do you think the outcome will be with the New Mexico spaceport?
I think one or two space ports would be commercially viable, but right now, at last count, they're building seven. And I just don't see the market numbers coming in to keep all seven viable. So it's
do seven detract from one good one? Like, would seven hurt New Mexico? Would New Mexico do better if it was standalone?
Well, I think a lot of, I think in this case, a lot's going to happen being first and best, because it's one thing to build a spaceport, and it's another thing to have something able to fly in and out of that spaceport. And the New Mexico spaceport has an advantage in that that's going to be the home port for Virgin Galactic. And if anybody's going to fly first, I would put money on them.
And they're still 2 years away or whatever.
Well, year and a half. I mean, I think they're talking, I don't know when they're talking about commercial flights, but I mean, White Knight 2 has already been rolled out and it's going through testing. And that's one of the things. I saw two presentations by Virgin Galactic and one by both by Will Whitehorn. And one of them is at the industry luncheon. And he show, and one of the slides they showed was some slides of actually Spaceship Two being built. So it is a real thing. It is actually happening. They had a, there's a pic, and it's huge. There's a picture of, Bert Rutan standing inside the hull of this thing. And he's 6 foot four. And he could stand fully, his full height, and still have room above his head before he reached the ceiling. So the thing is big. And that's the outer hull for sure, and they're going to have to build a lot of infrastructure inside. But a much, much larger structure compared to space, the cramped confines of Spaceship One. But it's being constructed right now.
Larry in Miami says, did you detect at IAC a space tourism interest? Are there a lot of people interested in going to space like there are over here?
Yeah, there was a lot of people. There were a lot of people interested in going to space. I mean, everybody who shows up there, no matter what their other interests are—the scientific side or the entrepreneurial side—they all want to go. I mean, that part is preaching to the choir. I mean, you get everybody into that central auditorium. You say, "Yeah, who wants to go to space?" And everybody raises their hands. Nobody's going to say no, you know, if given the opportunity. I think I said this during the break. The Koreans were there in force, because the conference next year will be in Daejeon, Korea, South Korea, and of course they're that included their Korean space tourist, and she gave several talks, and was on panels discussion.
Ben in Houston sent in a note that says, while you were there, did you come across any entrepreneurial or otherwise contenders for making a spaceship in another community or market or country other than the United States? Are you there?
Most of the displays in the big hall were from major consortia and major companies that already build things and do business. So, and these were the top companies in the U.S. and in Europe and in the U.K. smaller, nimble entrepreneurial companies that haven't built much yet, perhaps, or are just in startup phase. You didn't see a lot of those. I'm sure there were some people there probably representing different things, but they weren't presenting.
It's going to be an interesting time. This is Robert, also in San Diego, says, if you were an investor and you had money, either as part of an angel group or just on your own, would you personally invest in any of the companies presenting at Space Investment Summit number 5?
Well, I need to see their presentations and talk to them some more and do some due diligence, but there are a couple there I'd really have an interest in. Absolutely.
So you would be open-minded about it?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, interesting.
Yeah, there's a couple guys there for sure. If I had it today, I would really take a second and third look. Absolutely.
Let's move to a little bit of a different topic if we can. I did a program, let's see, about 2 weeks ago. Baron was on, who's the head of the board of Space Frontier Foundation now, and Will was on, the executive director. Baron is headed to Dubai for a big conference. Will was headed over with you to Scotland.
And
it's all Web 2.0. What exactly is meant by Web 2.0? They talked about the foundation is going Web 2.0.
It's just using fancier tools to get the message out. I mean, Web 2.0 has to do with the social networking type tools that you see, like on Facebook and places like that. And if you want to, and the attitude is, if you want to attract a younger crowd and get them more involved in the organization and not have it just be full of graybeards like you and I, then you need to go where they are and start networking and using the same networking tools that they use.
Speak for yourself, by the way.
Update the foundation's websites and its other tools to make it a little more interactive and interesting.
Is it going to bypass all the graybeards? Is it only going to be for, you know, the Gen Yers?
No, not really. I think in the long run, once it's in place, I think it'll make it easier for the graybeards to interact and be a part of the community. It really is. Social networking is really the name of the game in Web 2.0. And so there's a huge conversation going on, and you need to be able to take part in that conversation. And the tools we're using right now aren't enabling the foundation to do that.
Well, you're not a graybeard, and you're not a Gen Yer. So where do you see the area for growth for legitimate, not La La Land, space advocacy and support of commercial space development and market development? Is it across the board? Is it from the younger Gen Y group? Is it from, our group? Where do you see the growth coming from?
The growth is in the youth. And that's the one thing I'll tell you. I mean, they have a whole youth conference, pre-conference, at IAC before the real conference. It's very, very youth-oriented, and there's a huge turnout of lots of younger people. And they're very, very interested in these things. They're enthusiastic. They have a lot of energy.
Were you at that meeting?
Huh?
Were you able to go to that meeting?
I was not. That was like 3 days earlier. I had a specific, time and expense budget I could devote to this, and I had to stick with the real business end of the conference. And there's stuff that was happening like 3 days prior, and even over the previous weekend prior to the conference, and I couldn't do it all.
Well, you should do it all.
Maybe next year.
So you're going to Korea.
I'm thinking about it very strongly. I've got some business things I need to do here first.
What is the space connection to Korea, by the way?
Oh, they have a huge industrial park. That's somewhere. Daejeon is somewhere. It's not near Seoul, but it's a little farther. I don't actually know where it is geographically, but it's like I've seen the pictures that they've been showing when they were promoting next year's conference. Man, it's this huge, huge industrial city. It looks like this almost high-tech industrial city that was almost built from scratch. And it looks pretty fascinating. And I've got a bunch of material on it.
When will the transition for the foundation to Web 2.0 be complete? Do you guys have an effective point for that?
Not that I've heard of. I mean, we're still talking about that. There's a lot of different kinds of programming work that needs to be done, but... I can't really say off the top what a final deployment date will be. I mean, a new website is already in place and is at least, marginally out there, and we're just going to keep making improvements to it.
Are you finding being on the board to be a productive, rewarding experience?
I am. I'm having absolutely. It's been I kind of came in with the rest of some of these guys on the Web 2.0 kind of platform. So, I knew about all this going on before I even decided to run. I was actually convinced by Baron Soka I should run.
Well, what the listeners don't know is...
But I have not regretted it.
Well, talking about you being on the bandwagon of Web 2.0, what the listeners don't really know, although when it happened, we talked about it on the air... But the Space Show, having been podcasting since podcasting almost got developed, is 100% because of Tom, who brought it to my attention, and I said, what the what? And he pounded me on the head with it and really got me to understand it, and then handheld me through most of it, until I got to the point where, I found Gigadial, and then Andrew took it over from there. But we would not be podcasting were it not for Tom, or for sure I wouldn't have been podcasting 5 years ago or 4 years ago, whenever we started, and you were right on the cutting edge at the time.
At the time, I'm still trying to keep up, but
But
I'm a graybeard who manages to keep my mind open to new things and work with.
And you do know.
And there are others of us like that. I'll give a hat tip to Robin Snelson. She often gets a lot of people involved in things. She got a lot of people into Facebook and other places like that.
And Second Life, Robin's been
Second
a champion
Life.
With Second
Big
Life.
Time. I mean, that was
absolutely. But podcasting, we owe that to you.
Well, I'll
so,
accept that.
So there you go. You're our podcasting guru for the space show. And I should really, one of the things I want to do is make the space show website more interactive and user-friendly and Web 2.0, but it is a very, very costly process. And I've been interviewing people and companies that would host such a site, and I have to tell you, I'd make a pitch for every space show program about supporting the nonprofit because it is a big undertaking to do it. I literally cannot do what's involved in turning the website into a Web 2.0 version for the space show, including video and other stuff.
And the interactivity, don't forget.
And
that.
Interactivity,
you know,
and
the forum, the public forums, and the comment sites, and.
Yeah, and I've had people offer some free services and some volunteer services, and a couple of them I'm actually talking to, but most of the people are not at the skill level needed for, you know, the kind of, pipe that this show uses and a lot of other stuff. So it's evolved into a costly undertaking, and hopefully this economic downturn will not hurt nonprofits. There's a lot of us in the space community that fundraise and require funding. So, that is a risk with a downturn in the economy like that. There's no doubt about it. But where there's a good idea, it usually prevails, right?
Well, the thing with the web today is that you can spread a really, really good idea very, very quickly. The downside of it is you can also spread a really bad idea really, really quickly. So,
and you get copycats whichever way it goes.
It's a mixed blessing.
It's a mixed blessing. It's really hard to do anything that is secure and protective so that agency B doesn't, who's better funded than you perhaps or can move faster than you, can actually scoop you in a very short time with your own work and your own ideas. But look, you see how the political candidates have used Web 2.0 to maximize and raise capital for their campaigns. Obama is a master at it.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the results of it. And for anyone who thinks that is not the way to go, they're off in la-la land. I've been working with recruiting for space studies up at University of North Dakota to go Web 2.0. But, they're still in traditional recruiting mode. But that's where everybody is nowadays. You know, it's kind of a digital data-based world, isn't it?
That's true.
For good or for bad.
And that's not going away.
No, and unless they tax the Internet.
I always threaten to do that. That's the other part. The
or do, do something crazy like censor it or, cut out the last free bastion of true free speech.
The problem is the web as a whole is kind of this digital organism. The web sees any attempt at censorship as a form of damage, and it routes around it.
Like a self-correcting undersea fiber optics cable.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't stop the signal.
Well, I think China has learned that to some degree, haven't they?
Oh, the Great Firewall of China isn't so great after all, is it?
No, but they seem to be pretty good at hacking. But where do you see new space community? What do you see? Anything exciting between now and the end of the year?
Between now and the end of the year, I don't see anything big and new. I mean, the last big event was, of course, Elon Musk's successful launching of Falcon 1. I don't see any other world-shattering events of that nature coming up within the next 3 months. I'm willing to be surprised, but I don't see anything else in the pipeline right now that's really going to get anybody's attention going.
Well, there's a shuttle flight in mid-November to the space station for resupply.
Mm-hmm.
That's not I mean,
yeah, they put that off how many times?
Well, STS-126, they haven't put off. They put off the Hubble repair mission,
mm-hmm.
which is 125, and that will now go in, I guess, January or February. But in a way, the shuttle flights become so routine, we don't always pay a lot of attention to them.
That's true.
And, you know, it's been sort of a self-defeating thing to make space routine, which is what we all talk about. And then when you make it routine, you don't get the interest behind it and the momentum
but
behind it.
But it's not really routine.
Of course not. But
Continental flying 5 flights a day to the West Coast from Newark, that's routine.
Absolutely. But it's more routine, you know, than it used to be. And it gets less coverage because of that and less excitement because of that.
Yeah.
Which is success sometimes does yourself in. But I'm planning to see STS-126, so I will do a good report on what it's like to actually see and listen to and feel the vibration from a shuttle.
You're right. I should see that too.
Yeah. Well, before they
I have never seen a shuttle launch, and I really should do it.
Me too. This will be probably my first and only.
Yeah, we're not going to have many more chances, my friend. We better do this.
Well, unless they extend it, what do you think the likelihood is now that the bubble has burst that we're going to pay money to extend it?
That's pure politics. And I don't know. I mean, if they find the money for it, that's fine. But it really is pure global politics. If a bunch of politicians decide that it's unacceptable that we just ride with the Russians for 5 years, then they've got two choices. You have to somehow find a way to extend the life of the shuttle, or you have to find a way to speed up deployment of
COTS.
Orion.
Yeah, or COTS.
Yeah, or COTS. Or add another zero onto COTS money.
Well, in this economic situation, I don't think that's going to happen. But
I say they got two extra billion for...
Well, so Griffin, you know, what's he going to do? Allocate some of that to COTS, my husband?
I doubt it.
Yeah, put it all into Orion.
Yeah.
Or maybe throw a bone to some of the planetary science people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't really sure. I mean, I saw that blurb very briefly in the news as I was between countries, you know, end of last week. So I wasn't having that time to dig in deeper and read the underlying story and figure out why did they get that extra $2 billion? What's it going to be used for? What's the earmark?
As we wind the program down, for people who want to send a comment or question to you when they hear the podcast or the archives, do you want to give out an email address or have them go through me?
I have them go through you for now.
Okay.
I'm a little bit in flux. I'm doing some other projects, and that'd probably be easier.
Okay, and... you don't get off the show without pearls of wisdom, which you have done before.
We just got through the end of the biggest stock market meltdown in modern history. And so I guess at this point, I want to say hang in there and don't panic. It's not the depression yet. We have a completely different set of circumstances than we had last time something like this happened. And get your mind out of the idea of how is everyone going to make money. You just concern yourself about how you're going to make money. And there's always opportunities, even in a down market. And let me tell you something. Warren Buffett, in this incredible down period, he made $8 billion in the last 33 days.
Look what he has to play with, though.
Yeah, that's true. But even when everything else is crashing down around, he made $8 billion. Now, he did certain things. And when I find out what those are, I will report them to you. But but the point is, there is always opportunity in adversity. And just open your mind and look for it.
And stay calm. Absolutely, I would. Obviously, I'm not giving out anybody any investment advice, but I would absolutely say to stay calm. And when you hear all the panic, screaming, dramatic, drama queen headlines, take a deep breath and kick back and try to remain calm through it all, because it's not the end of the world. It's not, you know, the 30s or the 20s or anything like that. So stay cool, as they say, right?
Right.
And think space, because it will happen, even if it's deferred or delayed a little bit.
Absolutely.
And you, Tom, are going to be young enough to see yourself playing or possibly even doing some consulting off Earth.
Well, we can always hope.
Well,
if not, I'm going to invest in a lot of nanotechnology to keep me living a lot longer. So I can.
I'm not hoping. I know that you're going to have those opportunities. So, you know, I'm I'm excited. I would like to see them unfold in my lifetime, but I'm a lot older than you, and it may or may not happen for me, but it will definitely happen for you and our children. So, you know, keep the faith and stay grounded in reality, and only drink some Kool-Aid on a hot afternoon, right?
That's right.
Until the end of the year when you come back on the show, have a great Space Investment Summit, and, you know, I'll look forward to hearing back from you on that. If you have anything you want to say or get on the show about that, you have a direct pipeline to the host, so take advantage of it.
Okay.
Listeners, that's it. We're back live on Sunday, 12 p.m. California time, for our next show. Take care, everybody. Bye from Tom and myself.